Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I'll give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Jordan Balky, who is here to talk about her ever-changing life path. I'm super excited to have Jordan on this podcast. She is a wonderful human being, and I'm so excited to hear her stories. So, Jordan, why don't you say hello?
Hello, everyone. My name is Jordan. Places and reasons you might know me around the internet. I am the Dungeon Master on a D&D actual play podcast on the WBNE network called Late to the Party. And I also am an employee of the Super Carlin Brothers, who is a little bit more in the spotlight, I guess, during non-COVID times, because I get to run the in-person meetups, and so people might know me from there, or just managing their online community otherwise. Yeah, so that's who I am, and I guess why people might know me. And thank you so much for having me on, Sarah. Sarah is one of the amazing people that I was able to meet through the Super Carlin Brothers community, and honestly is just such a gem. And so I was very excited when you invited me, and just thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me, all of those comments. I was actually reminiscing the other day about how I, in the past couple years, most of the travel I have done has been related to Super Carlin Brothers meetups. And I was like, I miss being able to see people.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, I definitely feel it. I do want to talk not about the Super Carlin Brothers, but about Dungeons and Dragons. As a place to start, even though it's very specific, can you explain a little bit what having that podcast is like, what it is like to be a dungeon master and, in my understanding, kind of create an entire world and story?
Yeah, absolutely. So Dungeons and Dragons is a tabletop role-playing game where basically the die that you use most often is a 20-sided die, a d20, and one person is the dungeon master, or I suppose you could have more than one person, but I am the dungeon master on our group, and I have invented this world, sort of, in which things are happening, and then the party members, the four people who are on the podcast with me, they are just trying to battle the evil forces that I have created. And I say I've sort of created the world because the campaign that we're running right now is a little bit based in modern day Miami, Florida. It's obviously not 100% accurate because there's tieflings and giant monsters, but I had previously lived in Miami for an entire decade. And so I decided rather than trying to build a world that I wasn't super familiar with, I was just going to build a world on the back of something that I did know, and I've had a really fun time doing that. But yeah, so I get to create this world, and the people on the podcast help me build the story, and we have been playing for almost a year now and just have a really great, fun story arc that I hope, at least for this first season, will be coming to a close sometime early in 2021. I don't want to over or under promise for anybody who's wanting more, but yeah, it's been really, really exciting and also kind of challenging because I don't consider myself to be a creative person. And so building and creating a world and building and creating monsters and a storyline and interest is definitely challenging for me. But also one of the really nice parts about Dungeons and Dragons is if I get stuck, there's books and I can use dice to decide what comes next. Like, I don't have to always know what comes next.
That's really cool. And a great explanation. When I started listening to the podcast, I knew nothing about Dungeons and Dragons. I was just kind of like, I'll just listen to this little story. And I'm very inconsistent with listening to podcasts in general. So sometimes I'm like, what was happening? But you have a great group of people that you have on your team, and it's definitely a lot of fun. So it's cool to hear that you don't always know what's going to happen, and you might not think of yourself as a creative person, but you're definitely coming up with a lot of interesting things.
Thank you.
So you mentioned that you formerly lived in Miami for a decade. So can you take us through the different places you've lived and a bit of your journey to where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now, as a 30-year-old adult, and I'm not sure that I'm putting adult in quotes anymore, but if you had asked me a year ago, I would have put the word adult in quotes. So as a 30-year-old adult, I have had maybe three basic phases in my life. So in childhood, before college, I lived my entire life in Illinois in a couple of different small towns. I went to like the same school from kindergarten all the way through senior year of high school. And then after that, I went to Miami, Florida, the University of Miami for undergrad. And I knew basically in Miami that I wanted to do something with science, specifically medical science. I majored in biochemistry and thought, you know, do I want to be an MD doctor? Because that was sort of the dream that I had had when I was in high school. Or do I want to maybe just do scientific research and get a PhD, which is also an incredibly challenging path? Or do I want to try to combine both of those things? And after I graduated undergrad, which would have been in 2012, I didn't have a super clear path as to what I wanted to do, but I was convinced that I wanted to stay in science. And so I worked for a couple of years in a lab as a lab technician. I did, you know, a lot of cell culture. I got to do some really awesome surgeries on mice and just really neat, interesting stuff. But I also realized fairly quickly that if I wanted to go anywhere in science, a bachelor's degree just wasn't going to cut it. And so I enrolled in a PhD program also at Miami and just basically for the next 4 years got to continue doing all of the science things and really, really loved all of the work that I was doing. It was challenging and intellectually just exciting because there were always different problems to solve. You know, okay, if this antibody isn't working the way that it's supposed to, how do I need to change it to make it do what it needs to do? And at the same time, when I was in grad school, one of the things that I did involved a lot of time spent staring at a computer screen, counting dots. And it wasn't something that could be automated in any meaningful way. So I also at that time got really, really, really into YouTube. And it started with watching basically every single TED Talk that existed on YouTube. And then I found SciShow and Crash Course, both produced by Complexly. And although I don't think they were called Complexly at the time when I found them. And I watched almost the entire backlog of the SciShow and any Crash Course that interested me and just got very into that community. And then I found the Vlogbrothers. And from the Vlogbrothers, I also then found the Super Carlin Brothers. And so in addition to spending time in Miami doing and learning science and getting really involved with that, somehow I stumbled my way into an online community that is now what I'm doing for sort of the third phase of my life. So when, unfortunately, grad school didn't quite fuel the fire the way that it had previously, for a few different reasons, you know, when projects stall, it can really cause problems, not only with you as an individual, but also within your lab environment. And my mentor wasn't exactly the best person. In science, you're never really trained to be a mentor. And I was his first student, and he really struggled with that, and we struggled with that together. And so when I realized that the science was not good for my mental health anymore, and I wanted to bail, I had accidentally been building this other interest that I was able to pivot into a job. And then, yeah, now for the last 2.5 years, goodness, it feels like it's been so much longer. But for the last 2.5 years, my life plan and path have been different and landed me here in Virginia.
So what was it like taking that complete pivot and going to work for a creator? Was there ever any concern, any hesitation? Because it was so different than what you were doing. And the world of creators tends to be very unknown to a lot of people.
So there were definitely concerns and fears, because one of the biggest things that I had defined myself by when I was in Miami was that I was a scientist. And, you know, even defining myself as a graduate student and being really involved in graduate student life, I was on the Grad Student Association executive board for 3 or 4 years. And I did a lot of work for and with graduate student advocacy. Because of all of that work, I actually got tapped into an honors organization at the University of Miami, like the highest honor at the university that I still don't think I'm worthy of, but it clearly meant that the work that I was doing had an impact. And I had viewed myself as that person and version of myself for so long that one of my biggest concerns when giving that all up was, how will I redefine myself? Like, what are the things that I will say about myself when someone says, oh, tell me about yourself? Because that's a really interesting question. Like, when someone says, oh, tell me about yourself, a lot of people will default to talking about their job. Or if you're somebody who has kids, you might start talking about your kids. And all of the things that I had defined myself by were just sort of going away. But what I realized was that the core person underneath, the core values that I had of like putting goodness into the world by being kind and by being conscientious, or just trying to brighten somebody's day every day, all of those things that I guess were underneath the self definitions, those were still there. I just got to put different layers on top of it. And there's a lot of overlap in the mentalities of the science that I was doing and what YouTube is like. In science, you are basically told that collaboration is the biggest and best way to succeed. And I think that's something that we've even seen now in 2020, because like with the COVID vaccines that are happening, a lot of them have been mRNA-based vaccines. And that only happened because of a significant amount of collaboration and sharing of intelligence and knowledge. And in YouTube, it's kind of the same way, where every single creator can sort of do their own thing. But ultimately, collaborations are what does the best things for all of the various communities, because just like science doesn't exist in a vacuum, creators don't exist in a vacuum. So, for example, with the Carlin brothers, we had Seamus Gorman here in the States earlier in the year, even though he's a creator who does lots of similar things, but he's in the UK. And so we were able to have him here and do that sort of collaborative thing, which I think is what science definitely tries to do. And yeah, there's like a weird amount of overlap in mentality that I think made the transition easier than I was worried it would be.
That's definitely interesting, because as you were explaining it, I was like, that does make sense, but definitely wouldn't have been something you would think. Like you said, it's kind of finding the connections that you might not expect. And collaboration is evident everywhere, but is only utilized so much. Mm-hmm. So what is it like being such an important figure in an online community?
It's weird. Just you saying those words, I was like, am I? Am I important? No. I actually might also relate this back to a grad school story. I didn't intend to talk only about grad school, but I'm just realizing how much overlap there is. As a person in grad school, because I was so involved with grad student advocacy, I knew a very large number of the, at the time, 4,000 grad students that we had at the university. I would say that I could have recognized probably 2/3 of our grad students and named at least half of them. And I started realizing at that time that, like, if you are a person who has a voice and a platform, that you kind of have an obligation to use it for good. And I think that being a visible figure in an online community has just amplified that. In some ways, it feels like a daunting and overwhelming responsibility. But also, I've joked around that the only thing I know how to write is a persuasive essay. And that just everything that I write, everything that I say is secretly a persuasive essay. So right now, listener and Sarah, I am trying to persuade you all to be kind and respond with kindness in all things in your life. But I'm doing it subtly and sneakily, so you won't actually know, except for the fact that I just told you. But I think being a visible figure in an online community has not only shown me that there's no such thing as a small impact. It's just doing, like, every single impact, no matter how small, is a real impact. And it's just shown me that I can and I should push myself out of the comfort zone a little bit to do those things, even though it's scary sometimes.
Definitely scary sometimes. And you've kind of shown a little bit with things that you've said so far. People really like you and they really appreciate you. And you then say, oh, well, I don't deserve that. Or I don't think I'm of what you're putting on top of me. So it definitely, as you said, can be a lot of pressure. But it turns back to, it's the impact. The little things matter, and the impact that you're providing to other people is extremely cherished.
I'm so flattered, and just that I could even have a positive impact on anyone. I also don't think I'm special. I got lucky. That's for darn sure. And, like, of course I worked hard to get where I am and all of that, but I got very lucky. But I genuinely am not special in being able to have an impact. And I've joked before that I have just one rule to life, but it's actually a two-part rule. So, you know, I cheat. And my one rule to life is be nice to people. And then rule 1B with that is, your people, be nice to yourself too. And I just kind of feel like everybody, just by applying that one rule of being nice, can have an impact that looks, I guess, like what mine does to a lot of people. And I know for certain that I am the person that I am because I've had people turn around and give that kindness back to me, and because I focused on giving that kindness to myself.
And that's such good advice. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head that anyone can have an impact. You just kind of have to do it the right way and set your mind to that. And being special isn't even really anything that matters, because what matters is the impact, and matters, you know, how other people feel and how you feel. So how do you deal with the pressure and the responsibility of being online, and, like, what do you do for yourself as mental health needs?
So first of all, I'm in a lot of therapy. Therapy is for everybody. Please go to therapy. So I have been in a lot of therapy throughout my life, and also making sure that I surround myself not only with people who I believe push me to be a better version of myself, but also people who just help keep me grounded. I'm extremely fortunate. I live with both my significant other and my sibling, and they're both very good at keeping me grounded and centered in completely different ways. Like if I'm having a really emotionally taxing day where I just want somebody to hug me and tell me that it's okay, I'll go find my boyfriend and I'll just be like, hi, I just need you to like hold me and tell me that it's going to be okay. And so, you know, he's definitely been there for all of those bad days. And my sibling, they're a little bit more tough love, I would say, but they can do that because we of course have the 20 something years of relationship to build on for that. And so Tyler is not hesitant to call me out when I mess up. And I also think that having someone who will tell you, hey, you messed up, is a really good way to keep yourself in check and to really pay attention to just yourself and how you're feeling. And yeah, then of course, therapy. I actually have been through a couple of different therapists here in Roanoke because the first therapist I had, she was fabulous at that time. And then I basically got the things from her that I built my toolbox out with her as much as I could have, and then realized that I wasn't making progress on new things anymore. And I was just like, hi, you're great. And you helped me for a full year. And now I'm not making progress. Can I find a new therapist? And she was like, yeah, of course. Like, that's fine. And so now I'm with a new therapist who has just essentially built up my toolbox even more of like, here's what you do when you feel like you're going to have a panic attack and, you know, the weight of the world is crushing on you. And I certainly have built that out, and I feel like it's improved my relationship with myself, my relationship with the people, you know, closest to me, and hopefully my relationship with the people who are impacted by me in our community.
Yeah, therapy is so important. And it's great to hear just little bits about what it's done for you and how, you know, you don't have to stick with the same person, but the key is getting your toolbox and knowing what's best for you. So what is it like living with a significant other and a sibling at the same time? Is there ever any issues in the household, or is it all great?
I think that anyone who says that their living situation is 100% great all the time is either lying or just in some way slightly delusional. And that's not a burn on anybody. That's truly just life happens. Things are going to go wrong. So there are 3 humans and 4 cats in our house. Uh-huh. So initially living here, right when I moved to Roanoke, Tyler, my sibling, moved in with me. They had been living out in Illinois and had a pretty life-altering car accident back in 2017. And then we moved out here in 2018. And I think the change of scenery, change of pace, all of that was very, very good for them. And so I was super thrilled to have them here. And it was the 2 of us and 2 cats. And then I bought a house, which is part of why I think I might be a real adult now. You know, it feels real adulty. So I bought a house and another cat came with the house, because the people living here did not want to take her. And so it was 2 humans and 3 cats. And then my boyfriend moved in about 6 months after that. And so he brought with him his cat. So Tyler and I, we had some established things before Josh, my boyfriend, moved in of like, okay, these things work for us. But communication when things got bad was not a thing that we had. And that's something that therapy has helped a lot with, as well as just forcing ourselves to spend time together. I'm trying to think, probably the thing that leads to the most stress and fights, if we're being honest, is just cleanliness of the house in general. I know that I am a very finicky person when it comes to cleaning. And because of that, I try to be the one who takes on the lion's share of the cleaning responsibilities because number one, because I know it impacts my mental health. If the house is cluttered, my brain is cluttered. And also because if I'm the one who has these higher standards, I feel like I can and should be putting more work into the cleaning. But if I'm not doing so great and I need to rely on other people, it's sort of the balance of I don't want to be pushy or demanding because ultimately I am neither the mom nor the household manager. Like, technically speaking, yes, I own the house, but all three of us in everyone's perspectives should have fairly equal footing here. That was something that was really, really important to me, not only with Josh moving in because I didn't want him to feel like he was coming into my space, but also I wanted Tyler to feel like they have ownership over their space, over the whole house, that it's also their home. So there have been some issues with that for sure, particularly with the cats, because initially they didn't get along and literally they would pee on every single soft elevated surface. It was like 4 and 5 pee spots a day for a while. It was awful. I love my cats. I'm not going to give them up for anything, but I'll tell you what, I was ready to drive down to the shelter and be like, take them all. I don't want them. I can't handle this. It has since gotten better with a lot of work from us, as well as we actually hired a cat behaviorologist at the suggestion of a friend. And that was life-changing, absolutely worth every penny we spent on it. But yeah, so there have been some communication issues. I would say the best fix for that is that we have found is just trying to communicate intentionally with one another. One of the ways that we do that is every Sunday evening, just before the week begins, we all sit down and write out our like week plan of like, okay, here's what everybody has going on this week. Especially because we only have 2 cars between 3 people. So during non-COVID times, cars could potentially be an issue or a concern with like, okay, well, I've got a doctor's appointment this day. Well, I've got to do something for work. So how are we going to figure out the cars with that? But yeah, we call them house meetings and we just sit down, we meal plan for the week. We figure out what everybody has on their to-do list and how we can make it easier on people. Even little things like, oh, hey, I've got to work late on Tuesday, so I can't be responsible for dinner. Just communicating that ahead of time rather than scrambling on Tuesday night to figure out what's going on for dinner, it definitely saves life, saves fights, all of that. But yeah, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's never going to be. You just talk when things aren't good and try to talk before things aren't good so that you can anticipate those issues.
Yes, communication will go a long way. I think it's great that you have that weekly house meeting. I'm sitting here thinking like, we try to do that. We try to like sit down and figure things out and like we do really well and then we just don't. And then like last night I got a call like, so do we have dinner plans? And I'm like, well, we could either do this or we could do that. What do you want? Like, so it's great though to hear that between the three of you, you all have that ownership of the house. I think that is so important when people live together and aren't like your typical family unit of like parents and children and marriage and all of that. And it's 2020. Mm-hmm. It's not like even just in general, people aren't doing what they used to do. And then people are living different lives. And so I think it's great to hear that you make it work and that it sounds like a great house. 4 cats is a lot for 3 people.
4 cats is a lot for 3 people.
So how has your, if you don't mind talking about your relationship with Josh, obviously he moved in, you aren't married. So what has your relationship been like?
So 2020 obviously has been an interesting year. Josh's life and world haven't changed a ton, weirdly. So his work is in like the food production line basically, or chain. And so he has been considered an essential worker and has been going to work constantly out of the house for all of quarantine. Whereas I, in late March, we were like, okay, well, maybe we'll be working from home for a couple of weeks. And so then I like brought home a work laptop, and then we were like, oh no, we're going to be home for a while. So then I brought home my big work computer. But Josh's life hadn't changed significantly because of quarantine, but our relationship definitely progressed and changed because I've been home more. So his schedule basically has him work 2 days, off 2 days, work 3 days, off 2 days, and then it like flips for the following week. So he's home every other day, basically, or many days a week. And so if I just need a break, I get to like spend time with him and we eat lunch together. And so we have, number one, communicated more as well as more often. But living together, at least initially, we realized that because we could passively spend time together, we weren't actively spending time together. So we also implemented this thing that we call boo time. So first of all, we call each other boo, which makes me feel like an immature child sometimes, but it's just the name that I call him now, because when we started dating, we were like, you know, baby's kind of infantilizing, and like sweetie, hun, babe. We sort of like ran through all of those, but had used all of them in our past relationships. I don't even know who suggested boo, but I was like, I've never used boo to describe anybody. And he's like, me neither. Great, you're boo now. But so we not every day, but fairly often still have 10 minutes of boo time just in the evening where, you know, device is away and we're just spending time together, usually talking, not always talking. Sometimes we literally will just cuddle because it's just been a long day and we're tired. So that with our relationship has definitely strengthened it. And I would say, you know, changed our relationship for a positive. Unfortunately, earlier in the year, Josh's father passed away. And so going through that together also very much changed and strengthened our relationship. And I obviously, no one ever wants to go through something like that. But also in most relationships that last a while, you will go through something hard and painful like that. And so I think just being there for him, and I mean, kind of going back to the rule, just showing him kindness and understanding and support through all of that definitely changed and impacted our relationship. And I think also might have pushed him to communicate more. Yeah, I sort of lost sight of the question that you initially asked, because I'm just reflecting on like all of the different ways that it's changed. Living together has changed our relationship, basically. More than anything, I think we have become teammates through this, that like anything that we can do together. It's never been a me versus him thing when we disagree. It's always been an us versus the problem. And like, sometimes I'm still not good at communicating that, or sometimes he's still not good at communicating that. And we'll start a conversation that is a little bit more heated than it needs to be emotionally. And you're just like, oh shoot, let's reframe this. Instead of Jordan versus Josh, it's actually a Jordan and Josh versus the issue that we're having, whether that issue is, hey, the litter boxes aren't getting emptied often enough, or hey, we need to go see your mom.
Yeah, I think it's great. I love the concept of boo time. We would try to implement date nights, but the biggest thing we did was we implemented the after work hug, because I started working from home full time. And then my boyfriend didn't have, well, he had a job, but he was furloughed, but he knew he was going to go back to the job. So he was home full time, not working. So like we would see each other for lunch. And so then we implemented the after work hug to kind of say, work day is over. Like, stop thinking about work. Now it's us. We don't have to spend time together. We can spend time together. And even though he's now back working, I've been in the office, I've been home, we still kind of have that. And it's just this fun transition into, hey, the workday is over.
That's really smart. I'm going to implement something like that.
It also tends to be a soul crushing hug. Like, it's not like your casual, like, oh, pat on the back. Like, no, it's like big bear hugs.
Perfect.
Because sometimes you need that at the end of the day.
I love that. I love that a lot.
It's fun. So we're getting up on time, but I wanted to talk a little bit about turning 30. And you mentioned a little bit about changing from being an adult in quotes to being an adult. So what does adulthood mean to you?
I'm going to preface this by saying that I acknowledge that I have an immense amount of privilege. I grew up in a household where education was valued and I didn't have to work and therefore was able to like go to college and get a massive academic scholarship and therefore graduated without student loans. I know that this is not feasible or reasonable for the average millennial, but so I did graduate without student loans and therefore had some financial solvency and ability, even in my first job out of college, to be saving money. So in the last, I guess, year and a half now, it's been a while. Time is funny in quarantine. But in the last year and a half, I have bought a house and bought a car, both of which, I mean, I have a mortgage and I have an auto loan for both of those things. So I certainly don't own any of them outright. But I think for me, it's been the little moments of when something comes up, I can handle it. Whether the issue is, oh my gosh, there's 2 to 3 inches of water in my basement, which is a thing that happened this month because my sump pump failed. And I had that moment of panic and, you know, therapy helped me with the, okay, I can bring the panic down to a manageable level so that I can do what I need to do. And then I also had the like, okay, I know that the people that I need to call, you know, first I'm going to call a plumber and then I might call these two friends. I actually called one of my bosses, Jay Carlin, because I knew that he had had experience with water in his basement before. And I'm like, hey, what am I forgetting? You've done this before. He was like, oh, I did not have 3 inches of water in my basement. I'm like, okay, fair. He's like, yeah, the only other person I'd get on the phone with is in your insurance. And so I called my insurance. Of course, I don't have flood coverage, so get the flood coverage, folks. And just being able to handle that. And I actually had a similar thing with my car. I mean, the car that I had been driving was something that I had gotten from my grandparents back in 2011. And I hit a pothole, got a flat tire, bent the rim, had to get all of that replaced, and realized like, okay, this car is 9 years old. And in the last, you know, 3 years, 2 years in Virginia, the hills have killed it. And it's just time for something new. And making the decision to be like, okay, I can do this. I have done the research. I know how much I can afford. And like going out and doing that just made me feel like an adult, because to me, adulthood is seeing a problem, knowing you can handle it, and then handling it. And it's not always a direct path. You know, sometimes you've got to save money for something or do some extra research, or you're waiting for, you know, something to happen before you can do that. But at the end of the day, it's just looking at a problem and knowing that you can fix it.
You're making me feel like an adult, which is a term that I don't like to use for myself. So on the topic of insurance, get the rental car insurance on your vehicle.
Oh, yes.
It's so cheap. And when you get in a car accident and need a rental car, your insurance will cover it. Only if you have that insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Before we wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners?
Listeners, if you respond with kindness to the people around you and the and yourself, you can handle whatever today, whatever this week, whatever this year throws at you. I know that you can do it. So go do it.
Awesome. All right. So with every guest, I ask a random question at the end, typically nothing to do with the conversation that we've had. So my question for you is, if you were stuck somewhere in a different world, kind of, you know, related to D&D, and you could only eat one thing, what would that thing be?
Is soup too broad of an answer?
No.
Okay. Soup, because you like, there's brothy soups and there's big, thick, you know, almost stew-like soups, and you're definitely going to get all of your nutrients no matter what. And I mean, soup is good for the soul. It makes you happy. Also, here is where I argue that coffee is technically soup because it has beans in it, right?
I don't think that works.
Darn.
I don't.
Okay.
You can have all your other kinds of soup, but you can't have coffee as soup.
Fine.
Soup. What is your favorite kind of soup?
You know, lately I have a recipe that's like a knockoff of the Panera broccoli cheddar soup that is delicious. I'm pretty sure that we have some of that in the fridge from Monday.
Awesome. All right. Well, that brings this episode to a close. For more information regarding this podcast, you can check out the information in the description. We are on Facebook and Instagram. And to connect with Jordan's podcast, Late to the Party, and all of the awesome people that she is on there with, we have left her link tree, which will give you all the cool links to connect with them. And I'm also including her Twitter handle, so you can check her out over there. And if you are interested in guesting on this podcast, you can always shoot an email to the email. It is in the description as well. It's introducingmepodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. I'm always excited to talk with new people. And thank you so much to Jordan for spending time with me today, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next week, bye.
Bye.